Welcome home to the All Things Coheed podcast, coming at you from a galaxy far, far away. I'm Devin.
I'm Yui.
This is getting out of hand. Now there are two of them.
So, Devin, how did you get introduced to Star Wars?
So, my mom is a pretty big Star Wars fan, and I think just when I was like 3 or 4, she's like, yeah, I mean, he's a little kid, there's laser swords, episode 1 came out like the year after I was born, so it was just like, why not?
Oh, so your first exposure was the prequel trilogy?
No, it was the original trilogy. Oh. It was the original trilogy. Return of the Jedi was the one that I loved the most. Like, I can quote that. When it's on, I just talk. I just say the movie. It's really annoying, honestly. But it's like weirdly good for car drives, like long rides. I can just like go for it. But the first movie I saw in theaters was Attack of the Clones. And at the end of the fight scene, I remember... the movie was in theaters for so long that I was seeing it when no one was else was in there. So my parents let me take in the lightsaber and I just ran up and was like swinging it. That's like a core memory I have.
Little Kevin.
So that's how I got into Star Wars. How about you?
I was 6 in first grade and my parents, decided, we'd rent a movie that weekend. My sibling at the time, I have 3 siblings total, I'm the oldest of 4, but at the time it was just me and my brother Zach, and my mom was pregnant with my sister, and Zach and I were always like fighting about, what movie are we going to rent? I want this one, and for some reason my parents would only let us pick one. I'm like, why can't we just get two? Anyway, so they decided, like, no, we're picking this time. And we were, like, looking at each other, like, you know, this is BS, right? Yeah. But they brought home A New Hope. And they're like, this is Star Wars. They explained it to me. Like, they're like, this is a real people movie, because we mostly watched animated movies. So it was a real people movie. It was, like, serious business. We watched it and I never looked back. I thought it was the best thing in the whole world. And I think that, like, that part of my inner child is still very much alive in me today. That it's just kind of like magic of just being in space and being able to kind of see myself in multiple characters as well. You know, it's like, oh, like, I get to like go along with Luke on this journey. But, oh, here's Leia, and she's, like, so cool, and she's just doing whatever she wants, you know. And you have a crush on Han Solo, always.
Doesn't Harrison Ford, come on.
Duh. That's how I got introduced. Who's your favorite character? Oh, no.
I have 2 characters that I'm like, those are my boys. Cad Bane, RIP, yo, straight up did my boy dirty. And Hondo Ohnaka. Those are my 2 favorite characters. But like from the films, Obi-Wan and Luke, like those are. But the droids win my heart. Truthfully, I love all the droids too. They're so, you ask, it's like, what's your favorite Coheed song? You can't really pick one. But I'm going to throw that back at you. Who is your favorite character? I don't even need to ask this.
Yeah, this will come. If you know me, this will come as a surprise to no one. But Kylo Ren slash Ben Solo, and then Leia, not exactly a damsel in distress, but still needed help kind of a person, you know? Yeah, and she's just so fiery and strong and outspoken. As a kid, I wanted to be more like that. And Kylo Ren, because I identify with him the most out of any Star Wars character. And if that doesn't make sense to you, I'm not here to explain myself. But if you've never wanted to kill your dad, I don't think we can hang. Okay, I love my father. But we'll get to all of that.
There's so much to love about the sequels, and because of that, there's also so much to go against.
Uh-huh.
I'm really excited for those talks, because I feel like we're pretty much tit for tat up until then.
Yeah, I can't wait to fight about the sequels. It's gonna be good.
But for the meantime, let's jump into talking about The Phantom Menace. So we don't have an agenda for tonight.
We really don't.
we were very excited to do this, and I think the fact that we were so excited, kind of like, we just want to talk Star Wars. Who cares about an agenda?
I think we should put a bit of a disclaimer on this entire series that we're going to do. If you want us to sit and hate on any portion of Star Wars, it's probably not the place for you. We will be giving our opinions on Star Wars movies, possibly sidetrack into book territory, but as with most things, this is opinion based and just two friends discussing things and not an invitation to go to war. So keep moving if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, kind of like with the Amory Wars, you know, when we cover that stuff, there are some things that, you know, we may have differing opinions on, but overall, like, we're here because we appreciate the art. Yui and I are big Star Wars fans. We talk all the time about Star Wars. And there are a lot of parallels between the characters and the journeys they go through in the Amory Wars universe and in the Star Wars universe. There's a lot of tragedy, in both. But tonight we are covering the beginning of the saga, The Phantom Menace.
Turmoil has engulfed the Galactic Republic. The taxation of trade routes to outlying star systems is in dispute. Hoping to resolve the matter with a blockade of deadly battleships, the Greedy Trade Federation has stopped all shipping to the small planet of Naboo. While the Congress of the Republic endlessly debates this alarming chain of events, the Supreme Chancellor has secretly dispatched two Jedi Knights, guardians of peace and justice in the galaxy, to settle the conflict. So right off the bat, I think that if you did not pay attention to the opening crawl in the theater, you were completely lost.
Space politics,
which is kind of cool. But I wish we'd been given more time to kind of see all that set up, like given more context for the political landscape before we were just kind of thrust into it.
You know, it's the return to Star Wars after so many years, and after watching the original trilogy, how do you go back and fill in those gaps? Like, why is Emperor Palpatine the Emperor? Like, what, how did he get there? So it does make sense that it's like super political, right? Because it's all about the first United Galactic Empire at the very end of it. And it's a pretty big shift in gears from this hero's journey to like seeing the Jedi in their prime, right as they're about to fall. So it's a pretty stark difference.
Yeah, it is super interesting. And I think I was in middle school when this movie came out. And I remember being like super stoked. It was the first Star Wars movie I ever got to see like in theaters, which was super, super cool. It felt very confusing for me then, and it's still confusing now.
There are a lot of things that like just don't make sense. Kind of akin to when you see the ghost of Inferno in Keeping Secrets. It's like just a weird thing that doesn't make sense. It kind of gets retconned. There are a lot of those moments in Star Wars, and I kind of live for those moments, because that's what makes it campy, and like that's what makes it fun to discuss and debate. And the first line that Obi-Wan says is, "I have a bad feeling about this. Come on."
It's like, oh, here we go. Dialogue issues out of the gate.
Then immediately you're hit with one of those moments that I just mentioned. The drinks. They try to poison them with the gas, with the dioxys gas. But they serve Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon drinks that they drink. They take sips of it. They could have just poisoned the drinks.
That is such a beautiful observation. Yes, they were like, no, we'll get them really good. We'll get them with air.
Send the droids in to shoot them. Like, what's with the overkill here?
They just really, really hate Jedi. They're really good. They're really good at strategic death. Bringing, killing, what?
We're talking about the Trade Federation here.
Yes.
I feel like George Lucas was a little racist when creating the characters for the Trade Federation.
It's a bit awkward. It's like me saying that, it sounds like kind of trite, and I don't mean to sound trite. But yeah, there's a lot that goes on in this movie where I'm like, it's hard to really nail down, and yet I'm raising many eyebrows.
It's just a little questionable, you know. Why have them speak in accents when you could just have like alien voices and subtext on the bottom?
Yes.
You know. All right. We'll move past this. We'll move past this.
I think that's a good point, and I think that is something that current Star Wars takes care of in a much better way.
I agree, and it makes you feel more in universe, mm-hmm. that hearing these different dialects from across the galaxy.
So moving along, I probably do not have as many notes as you. I'm totally like piggybacking off of your notes.
Okay, so the droids come to kill them after they've been gassed and after they should have been poisoned by the drink. And we see these Jedi in their prime use force speed, incredible lightsaber skills, they force push. So right off the bat, you know, all the stuff that we see Luke do in episode 6 when he's, you know, finally reached his apex in the story, these Jedis are just doing right off the bat. So it's like, oh man, you're setting up for this incredible story. The droids look good. I love the design of the droids. How did you first feel when you saw the droidicas roll up?
Okay. This is an age, you know, because like when, you know, the first movie I ever saw was A New Hope, and things feel a bit more like archaic and like stressed out, you know? not as smooth. You can tell that this is like a period in Star Wars, in the Star Wars timeline, that is very like refined and everything works like it should. And we've got the Jedi and this is our perfect world and this is, everything's cool. And, including the droids.
Everything looking perfect and cool.
Yeah.
Amidala's outfit, her first appearance in the beautiful red dress.
Yeah. Every outfit of Queen Amidala's, every outfit. I would like to applaud the costume designers. All of you deserve awards. I hope that you received them. I should probably know if you did. no, and I love, too, the fact that one of, you know, the story is very much centered around a female character, which was nice to see off the bat. We have this woman in a position of power, and you find out later that this woman is actually a very young girl, about my age when I saw it. So that is super important for, I think, I know me and other young women who at the time and who are going to watch in the future.
And they continue making her a badass. Like, she, at one point towards the end of the film, when they're storming their own castle back, she just, like, we don't have time for this. And they shoot through the window and they go right up, like, total badass. She's in, kills it in the Clone Wars. And she fights for what she believes in. And that's such, like, a strong sentiment of Star Wars.
I'm always just like who, like, where did she come from? Like, where, like, who is this child who's just like, no, I know what needs to happen. We're not going to war. Like, we are going to preserve peace. I'm not going to lose the lives of my people. Like, she, and she's willing to put her own life on the line many times that you see. And then later goes on to be, you know, in even in, more in the, into the political scene.
I think the at least my favorite action of hers during the film is when they go back to the Gungans to get help to storm Theed, and she bows to Boss Naz, and it's like, oh, it's such a beautiful scene. Like, it's ridiculous because the Gungans are also like their own form of ick in a way.
Yeah,
but like to see that level of equity be promoted in that way, I think is a good message overall.
She is respected because she gives that respect to others. And that's an important quality for a leader.
Kind of what Boba Fett was trying to do in Book of Boba Fett.
It's true. We will get to all of that. Yes, we will. Oh, man. Okay, Jar Jar. We should talk about Jar Jar.
Hey, yo, Danny, Captain Tarpos, me se back.
No, again, Jaja. You sa going to the bosses. You sa in big doo-doo this time.
Bless it. But, okay. Jar Jar is like a huge point of contention in the fandom. I can understand why adults kind of back away slowly from Jar Jar, right? But friends, have we not all been Jar Jar at some point in our lives?
Like,
have we not all been some clumsy ass weirdo? Like, you know, and I think what's even more kind of sad and ridiculous about human beings is that the hurt, like, they can't just dislike a character. They have to harass and belittle and trash the people and actors, you know, that bring these things to life. And the actor who did Jar Jar's voice, I'll own it, I didn't bother to check the pronunciation of his name, but I believe it's Ahmad or Ahmed, sorry, Ahmed Best. I believe that he actually contemplated suicide over, you know, how he was treated in part post Phantom Menace release. You know, he talks about it in different interviews, and I think that it's scary and weird that people take their level of criticism of art to those kind of depths where they go after a person's character and a person, but like they make it personal, and it's simply not, you know? And I think that's a problem in a lot of circles. Anyway, I just wanted to touch on that because I believe amplifying his voice and his experience is important.
You're absolutely right. And that's, you know, something we see with the new Prize Fighter or the new Coheed music. You know, people take it so personally because they care about it, which is understandable. But there's a point where it's like, okay, if this is not for you, just take a step back, chill out. I think the actor that played Anakin stepped down from acting after that as well. And then we saw it again recently with the actress that portrayed Rose. And, you know, the script is the script. These are actors and actresses putting on their best performance of what was given to them. It's not like he is Jar Jar, you know? And Star Wars is for kids. We love it because it was a part of our childhood. And, you know, even if you discovered Star Wars at a later age, there's something very nostalgic and childlike with the wonder and mystique of it all. So it does, you know, it does hurt when it's misrepresented in your eyes. But, you know, it's, I see it as whoever's in charge of whatever IP, they're playing with the toys that we all played with when we were younger, and we were clashing all this stuff together. And that's the joy of it. And that's what's so cool about some of the newer shows like Mandalorian and Boba Fett, where they don't really have to care about the Skywalkers. You know, they're doing their own thing with all these really interesting and genuinely well-written characters. Could Jar Jar have been written better and maybe less character-like? Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that there are fair criticisms you can make of any piece of art.
Right.
But yeah, and you're right, Kelly Marie Tran, who played Rose, and even Daisy Ridley, both of them got off of social media after the release of the sequel trilogy, because largely in part because of the way that they were treated by fans, quote unquote. So that's fun.
But also, I wasn't going to bring it up, but now I am. In the Clone Wars, canonically, Jar Jar gets down and freaky. So, you know, probably more than the people that are criticizing him. I'm just throwing that out there.
Jar Jar does whatever Jar Jar wants.
Especially Qui-Gon, who is mad shady the whole film, bro. He tricks Boss Naz right off the front and gets them to get the Bongo ship, which almost gets eaten immediately, but there's always a bigger fish.
Indeed there is. Qui-Gon is, like, kind of dope in, like, the way, like, he's kind of, like, the guy that believes in God and is spiritual, but is like, nah, I'm not going to church.
That is a really good way to put it.
Yeah, I get that. I resonate with that.
I mean, so he manipulates to get out of there with Jar Jar. Then he throws the dice game with Watto after trying to get him to sell the ship for Republic credits. He flirts with Anakin's mom.
No, stop.
Oh, what's up with that? I'm taking your son. He straight up asked her who's the father. Like, personal? Come on, man.
Like, where's this kid's, where's the baby daddy? Like, and yeah, and he's all like chivalrous and smooth around her. And I'm like, bro.
He is smooth. He is. I'll give him that.
Like, Qui-Gon, you're, first of all, you are Qui-Gon. You can do what you want. get this woman off of this planet.
Right. And they don't even talk. So the whole point of him not being able to free Shimi is because the slaves on Tatooine have trackers in them that kill them if they try to escape.
Okay. But
they don't bring this up at all when Anakin gets freed. How do they get the tracker out? Where was it? Where is this process?
The midichlorians hid the tracker, Devin. Duh.
Okay. Qui-Gon stole his blood. He said he was testing it for infections. He straight up got it tested for midichlorians. He broke so many HIPAA laws in this movie. It's ridiculous.
HIPAA just had a seizure. Oh my goodness. R2-D2. He just shows up and does his little thing. Saves the day.
Ride or die from day one.
Mm-hmm. I will say I loved our introduction to R2 in this movie. I was like, oh, there he is. Look at him.
Expected.
Although I do want an R2-D2 origin story. But for real, where? Where? And who?
Oh my gosh. Oh, they would make it so sad. They would have R2 based on some droid maker who is just this nimble old fellow with a personality and, oh man. But the ships too, I feel like the ship design in itself is iconic. The chrome cruiser that they fly in, the Nubian cruiser is you see that and you're immediately watching The Phantom Menace in your head.
Yeah, I'm sold. Mm-hmm.
And same thing with the N1 starfighters that we again see in Book of Boba Fett. That's it takes you right there.
I thought that was a really cool way to bring the prequels forward a little bit. Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about the new stuff later, but baby Anakin, what in the world?
He's so genuinely a child.
It's yeah, I mean, he truly is just this kind of wide-eyed, just wanted to race the pods, you know, that's all he wants to do. I mean, it's very, what I feel is, for that time, kind of stereotypical little boy, you know, who may be starting to notice that girls do not have cuties.
Are you an angel? Oh my gosh.
That's a tough one right there.
I need to learn from Qui-Gon a little bit.
I know, watch him learn.
Not with his own mom, no.
No. That's not what I meant. That's absolutely not what I meant.
On the flip side of Anakin, though, we got Darth Maul.
We do. Okay, Darth Maul is the dopest looking villain. Look, Darth Vader and Kylo Ren both have iconic, great, helmets, costume, whatever, imagery surrounding them. But Darth Maul is different because it's no, that's his face. That's just literally how he lives. He just hangs out, you know? It's even more iconic, I think, than Palpatine because eventually, when Palpatine gets disfigured and wrinkly, whatever looking, it's still just it's just a creepy old weirdo in a hood. You know, Darth Maul is very just powerful in your face, kind of a, yeah, I'm here to be a villain type of a thing.
I like the first lightsaber fight on Tatooine. When he almost runs over Anakin without knowing who Anakin is, he's straight up fuck them kids. Almost kills Anakin. And then he just comes in with such rage. I think it's an underrated fight scene. But he definitely comes in mad hot.
I need a moment to recover. Oh my goodness. It's true. Yeah, it's this whole time, it's Anakin's just kind of flying under the radar. Yeah, nobody knows about this little person with midichlorians, apparently. Yeah, oh, sorry, this is a backtrack to, the blood analysis of Anakin. It was like, how do you just have this at your fingertips? Like, is Obi-Wan, like, secretly, like, a lab technician?
I think it's really funny that Obi-Wan stays on the ship the whole time, because they're on Tatooine, and then he's exiled there for how many ever years, 19 years until Luke's. So it's like, good thing he didn't get out right now. He would have been really annoyed if he had to keep going back to this freaking planet.
He's like, oh, I went to Tatooine once. Wasn't that bad. Oh, wait, I never left the ship.
We also, you know, with going back to Maul now, get the line, this is getting out of hand. Now there are two of them. That's a really good prequel meme.
It absolutely is. We need to, like, somehow merge that into Coheed fandom.
Oh, my
God. Somebody get on that right now, audience.
The Where's My Lightsaber When I'm Screaming Danger shirt?
That was the most wonderful shirt. I don't have one, and probably never will. God bless all of you who do have them.
This has been Merch Monday on a Friday.
Merch Monday on a whatever. What even is this? It's Wednesday, isn't it?
Wednesday, February 23rd. Coheed and Dance Gavin Dance tickets went on sale today. Oh, my God. Ah.
Yeah, my husband may have peed a little when that announcement got made.
It's so fire. Yeah.
I think most of us peed a little.
Oh, yeah. Maybe some other stuff, too. Anyway. Wada.
Okay, what were you gonna say? I'm sorry.
Watto. That was like my talking point, but only money works on Toydarians. What?
I have nothing.
That was anyway.
Yeah. Watto almost sounds like what's her news from Monsters Inc. I'm always watching. It's like what is his, I don't know. If I saw the credits and then checked the Monsters Inc. credits, I would not be surprised if they were the same.
I do like now talking about Anakin, how he is represented as a young kid. He likes to play with things. He's building like Legos. You know, he builds C-3PO, which, oh my God, naked C-3PO. Like, what?
Naked.
And he races pods, you know, racing cars or playing with cars. And then when Qui-Gon comes in and he sees the lightsaber, and then he tells his mom, you know, it's what I always wanted. It's like, dude, you just found out about the Jedi. What? But that's such a kid thing to say and do. And then, you know, his attitude definitely sets up for the angst that we get in episode 2.
Absolutely. And I also think, too, it's like he has a sense of, like, the Jedi holding promise and future and purpose, which he is not going to find long term on Tatooine. Tatooine is one of those planets where dreams go to die.
It is a coming of age story in a sense. Like, he's going from a kid that's like hit the nose to losing his mom, and then, you know, losing the only other person he really cares about. And, like, that's so he just loses. Anakin just takes the massive L this whole time because Palpatine is a shady bastard. And, like,
absolutely, you know.
A fun fact, though, about Qui-Gon's communication device. I'm sure you already know this, but it's a Gillette razor with the head removed. And I think they just spray painted it silver.
Because they spent all their money
on the CG, which at the time was really good. But it now it's like, oh my gosh, the grass doesn't have texture. It's just green.
Right. I have more thoughts on the CGI. I'll save them.
Okay.
I will say that in The Phantom Menace, I think it actually looks better than it does in, like, Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, okay.
Maybe not every scene, But no.
I'm excited to I haven't watched them this closely back to back in a while. I'm excited to now compare them across all the episodes. No one can kill a Jedi.
Technically, he may be right. There is the Force. There is no death. There is the Force.
So, I mean, I think it's ironic because Mans becomes the Jedi Slayer 3000, but.
It's true. There's a lot of irony there. You also just referenced Palpatine.
I did. I did. Shall we talk about the puppet master himself? Do you think he puts his hood on and takes it off between every call? Like he turns around, he like has his hood on, and then he flips around. He goes, "Ah, yes, Queen Amidala." Like really quickly. Or do you think he ever calls the wrong one and he's like,
he's got his hood up, like,
take off the hood?
I hope that he makes mistakes like that.
It's like I got two phones.
I got my Sith phone and my Senate phone. Basically like every politician. Zing.
I think I watched in a documentary that they were like trying to make it a mystery who the Emperor was. There was never any
question.
Like
Senator Palpatine. Like what? People didn't know that it was Emperor Palpatine? I mean, I guess in the original trilogy, they never named him that. They just named him as the Emperor. But it's like, duh. You know, like, I really think you'd have to be living under a rock to not understand that's who it was.
The plot twist in this one, though, was actually pretty surprising, of Padme being Queen Amidala, the true queen.
Yes. I would say that was actually kind of brilliant. It was like, oh yeah, of course she's got a decoy. Because she's smart as hell.
So smart. And like, it's, you create such like an iconic character, and then to have them not actually be who you thought them to be is a really good play. And then it comes back when they are storming their castle at Theed. The Trade Federation believes that the decoy is really Amidala, so they send all their forces to them, and then Padme opens a secret hatch and gets the guns and flips the script on them. Such, like, that is an amazing part of a very mid movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you think Qui-Gon knew that?
Oh yeah, I don't. I think he kind of knows everything.
He seems to like think that he knows more than Yoda, which is like, which those scenes are pretty interesting.
He probably does know more than Yoda. I mean, it's one of those things like where you have like two like really powerful Force users coming at life and the Force from two different perspectives. They both know a lot. And they're both probably right, and both probably wrong.
That's a really good way to put it. And I think in one of the deleted scenes in Revenge of the Sith, Qui-Gon talks to Yoda. Not as, like, a full Force ghost, but I think in the Obi-Wan show, it would be very interesting if that's how Obi-Wan learns to turn into a Force ghost, is through Qui-Gon returning and communicating with him.
Oh, we are absolutely gonna see that. Oh my goodness.
And, you know, like you said, two powerful Force users, Qui-Gon steals Anakin's blood, we get to hear about the midichlorians, and that broke the fandom for a hot minute there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the midichlorians was kind of a weird, like, what is this? And then it gets abandoned, and because it was never brought up before, it's kind of like, you know.
It took the fantasy out of Star Wars a little bit and made it, like, a little more science fiction-ish, but it's a space opera. We don't need the math behind the force. Like,
yeah, it's a space, yeah, opera, fantasy, whatever. Let us have our magic. Okay. We don't need to explain it.
But speaking of magic, when Kitster tells Annie that his pod racer is so wizard, and then after the Mandalorian runs the gauntlet of the pod race, and he says that it was wizard, oh.
Oh.
So good. So good.
My cold, dead heart. it was a sweet little callback.
And then we get to it. The moment that we've all been waiting for, the pod race.
Moment that most of us have been waiting for. So I thought it was like, it was good, obviously. It was great. It was fun. I feel like it took up a little too much time, but.
Yeah.
But that's how most chase/big runny action scenes are in Star Wars. I'm like, they could have ended that a minute ago.
Book of Boba Fett.
The Fawbear chase in The Last Jedi. People don't take that wrong. The Last Jedi is my favorite. Okay, so.
Right. Valid criticisms in some of our.
Yeah, a valid criticism.
The one thing that I will never criticize is just the random fart joke that they throw in. When just Jar Jar gets farted on right in his face, and like that's the scene. That's it.
We're just giving them this. We're giving the audience a fart scene, and we'll all move on with our lives. It's for the kids, okay? It really is. I think thoughts are all a little bit disjointed, but you know, like. If you look at Jar Jar from a perspective of, like, a child, Jar Jar is hilarious.
The funniest man alive.
What? Yeah, it's like Jar Jar is the great, hilarious, ridiculous, give me that guy, you know?
But he electrocutes his tongue, too, with this. And then I think we see Jabba and Bib, which, you know, Return of the Jedi, back on Tatooine. They run the pod races. There's a lot of talk about the Hutts. And then we see Aurra Sing and the Tusken Raiders, which we are given a lot of backstory in the Book of Boba Fett about the Tusken Raiders. Definitely has you seeing them in a different light. At this point in time, it's definitely you can definitely see that Anakin could be afraid of the Tusken Raiders, that he lived his life in fear of them. They're shooting at him while he's just trying to win his race.
He's just out there existing, and they don't care.
We also see Jawas, which I thought was strange because there's no way that Nubian ship, chrome-plated, survived overnight with Jawas and Tatooine. I don't believe it for a second.
I suppose we're going to have to chalk that one up to the mysteries of the Force. I mean, like, Obi-Wan's probably like, If the Force, like, if Jedi's had access to a concealment charm, so to speak, we'll pretend it's Harry Potter.
Wizards, it's...
Yeah, they're space wizards. That is literally what is going on here. So that is probably why that ship survived untouched.
Speaking of touched ships, Sebulba is such a bitch.
He is the worst.
He kicks that thing off of Anakin's pod racer so nastily. It's like, bro, get a hobby.
But I'm like, you appear to be a grown ass, whatever species you are, and you're picking on a child.
Yeah,
that's kind of like have you seen Luca, the Pixar movie?
No.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, never mind. But It's kind of like that. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Well, now I want to watch Luca, but I'll keep that in mind now. I'll have that reference stored.
Yes. And you'll know it when you see it.
Okay. When I watch it, I'll text you and be like, ah, yeah.
Yeah. Luca is a great movie. It's very cute. I like it better than Encanto.
Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. I didn't really love Encanto. You know what? We can do a Disney episode later. We can do a Disney episode later. It's fine.
Sounds amazing.
Then, you know, so he wins the pod race, gets freed from slavery. Qui-Gon's like, sorry, mom, deuces.
The scene where Anakin is leaving his home and runs back with his mother, I cry every time. Every time. Especially now that I'm a mom, and it's like, it shows you like what an incredible woman she is. That she's like, no, like that you are meant to do this. Like, you need to go. This is your path. This is your calling. You know, and as a mother now, like I said, it's like all I want for my daughter is for her to find her own path. Even though that means that path. Yeah, someday will lead her away from me. Like, that's all you really want for your kids, is for them to go out and do those things. And she, you know, she gets left. She gets left behind. And that's sad.
Yeah.
It really is. It's a very sad thing, and I think for a lot of reasons. You know, mothers sacrificing so much for the good of their children and laying themselves down time and time again for the benefit of their children, to the point where they lose them. And then what do they have left? You know, I do hope that she found happiness and fulfillment once Anakin left. And I know that, you know, her path leads her away from slavery. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Yeah, it's a.
We'll get there.
Most tragic characters in Star Wars, for sure. You know, just trying to do the right thing. You know, had Anakin out of will of Palpatine. Like, it's just this poor woman.
Yeah, it's like, but we go through it, man.
What's honestly that, like, the Jedi are now aware that there is like confirmed slavery on Tatooine,
and they do nothing.
They're like, nah, that's controlled by the Hutts, dog.
We out.
Peace.
I have some Jedi Council stuff.
Oh, let's jump into the Jedi Council.
I was just thinking, so a little bit of personal background for me. Grew up in a very niche branch of Christianity. The Jedi Council very much reminds me of a like church kind of leadership structure, where the intent is to do the right thing and to kind of uphold a set of standards and a set of laws and beliefs, but they just wind up missing the mark a lot of the time, because they sacrifice people before they will sacrifice what their script kind of says. If that makes sense. Maybe that resonates with some people more than others. If you didn't grow up in a religious background, it may not quite resonate, I think more people will resonate with that than not.
Well, Star Wars, I mean, like, the what I really like about the newer movies is that they realize that the Jedi were wrong, right? That the past needs to die. This is not sustainable. There's a reason why the Jedi fell. You know, you're not going to create utopia. It's impossible. There's always going to be conflicting views, and completely cutting yourself off from things is often not the way to success when you're dealing with a society like this. And You know, even in Jedi Fallen Order, Cal, at the end of the day, he ends up with the holocron to find the kids to rebuild the Jedi Order, and he destroys it. Anakin's mom gives him the choice. She tells him, this is your choice to make. You know, if he wants to do it, he can do it. He does, like, the idea of choice, and that's a big theme in the Animary Wars as well, the idea of free will. And for that to be the ever-going theme all the way through when Vader's on his deathbed and he makes that final choice, he always had a choice the whole time. And it's just about like having the right people in your life at the right time to maybe sometimes help you see those choices. And the Jedi Council, they see his fate as undetermined and they think it's bad. So they push him away and they're always hesitant with him, where Qui-Gon was open and he was like, we can train him.
Yeah, they made up their minds about how his story would go. And that's a huge moral failing, in my opinion.
Absolutely. They let the word of the prophecy really guide their eyes and their judgment. And that's just done wrong.
Yeah, they did not look at the child in front of them. You know, they really didn't. They thought they – oh, and they also, you know, if the Sith had returned, they would have known it. You know, because the Sith, they just go about announcing, right?
Absolutely.
But, you know, the Sith, they couldn't have possibly found a way to conceal what they're doing. They're not sneaky or anything.
No, absolutely not. They would absolutely not let Queen Amidala vote for no confidence in Chancellor Valorum and then let Palpatine take over. No way.
Wild. I thought of it as like, it's almost like Cornelius Fudge in Harry Potter. It's like, Voldemort's not back. What are you talking about? Like, no, I literally saw him with my eyeballs.
Once that happens, that's the beginning of the end, because now he's in the chair. He's got it. And I think that it's really interesting to see how many units are represented in the Senate for the galaxy. And it's just kind of terrifying in a way that all these people are going to eventually go with this corrupt leader. And you just know that everyone is doomed for a time being.
Yeah, it's like there's just a very sinister air about it all.
We do see Yaddle in the Jedi Council scenes. And Grogu is a little baby, right?
Uh-huh. So
all I'm saying is, we ain't see Yaddle do much.
Maybe.
But maybe behind the scenes she's doing something.
She should be, you know, she's grown up. She can do what she wants.
But then of course we get Yoda, who is a puppet originally and then gets remastered to CG later on. I had no qualms with the puppet. I know that's also like a point of contention.
Oh,
it's just Yoda, man. Like,
I think both are great.
Yeah, the puppet is a little derpy, right? But
I love derpy.
It's iconic. But he does give us the quote, you know, fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering.
You know, and it's funny because it's like, yeah, you're not wrong. But this is a baby boy in front of you.
Yeah, like, what are you dropping on him? He's like,
yeah. It's like they just wrote him off.
And they sense the fear in him. And it's like, yeah, he's going to be terrified. You stole him from his home planet.
I mean, honestly, like, through all this, we can kind of blame the creation of Darth Vader on the Jedi Council.
Oh, without a doubt.
Look what you did.
All the signs were in front of him. In front of them. They just had to listen to him and have his back.
Mm-hmm.
And when he needed them to, they didn't.
Well, and two, like, Obi-Wan training him, it's like, great. But Obi-Wan's also a little bit more of a rule follower.
This is true. He also, when Anakin's about to board the ship, he tells Qui-Gon, are we bringing another pathetic life form on board? And then they become brothers. So he initially also, you know, kind of was not about it. He didn't want to train the boy. He was, you know, fighting Qui-Gon on that as well, you know, trying to follow the rules. And, I mean, it gets him exiled to Tatooine for so many years. So I guess don't always follow the rules.
Didn't work out. Sometimes the rules should be broken.
We also get the quote around this part. Surprise to be sure, but a welcome one. One of the better Palpatine quotes.
It's so true. It's applicable in my life.
It's his delivery. The way Ian McDiarmid just plays Palpatine, it's so just like, yeah, you're such a silly goose, bro.
I love him. I'm sure he's like a delight in person.
Another one is when he goes to Anakin, we'll be watching your career with great interest. Who says that? What is like six?
Like my career. I'm 10 years old.
Okay, so we're back on Naboo. We get a Wilhelm scream. Nice little reference to the OT. But then we get the reason why this movie was made, in my opinion, for the one moment where the double doors open and Darth Maul pops out with both lightsabers.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, all right.
Yo, Duel of the Fates starts playing.
Impeccable.
Yes, he went crazy on the soundtrack.
John Williams, man, what a guy.
It's like, double saber is hard, right? The no look blocking of Obi-Wan behind him, hard. Duel of the Fates playing, the hardest hard, bro. It's so good. It just, 10 times more effective at like, okay, we got past Jar Jar. We got past pod racing. Like, we're here for a fight scene.
The way it's shot is I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. It's a bit unfortunate because I think it's one of the better fights. I think it's one of the better lightsaber duels in the entire saga. I wish it just been shot just slightly differently. Do I know what I mean when I say that? No. But I think obviously anything done today would have been different than it would have been back then. But I do, that said, I think it's one of the better fight scenes in the whole saga.
Really just quick, I think. A lot of the cuts and the movements are very fast. And all the lightsaber fights that we've seen prior have been like these really dramatic, dialogue-driven fight scenes. You know, no one's really jumping over each other and kicking each other and punching each other and all this stuff like that. We never seen anything like that before. And, you know, Darth Maul is just such a good-looking villain. It's so cool watching him just tear shit up. But as we watch Darth Maul and Qui-Gon fight, Obi-Wan also watches Darth Maul and Qui-Gon
fight. Yeah, I kind of love that because as the audience, you're like, you're with Obi-Wan. You're like, oh my goodness, what's going to go on now? And, you know, and it's also funny too because, like, as the audience at that point, you don't know, is Qui-Gon going to make it out of here? This is the first movie in a new trilogy. We don't know what's going to go on. Now we know, of course. But back then, you know, you're in your theater seat as a middle schooler, like, what's going to happen to him? And, well, we know what happens.
Yeah, there's Darth Maul puts another hole in him, one that shouldn't be there.
Unacceptable.
Really sad. The way that Obi-Wan watches everything comes back in Rebels when they have their final fight. And the fact that it only lasts 2 seconds because he has this event in his life memorized, it traumatized him so much that he has held on to it for all this time and they can both finally let it go is like such good character development. So good.
Super powerful.
But in between all of this like emotional fighting with Darth Maul, you have Anakin clumsily fumbling through this droid's, like, spaceship and blows it up from the inside and references pod racing again.
We don't know how you've made it this far, Anakin, but...
Like, he's like 6 years old and he's taking down a massive, you know, government push with robots and all this stuff. And he just takes it all down in one swipe.
He's, you know, he's got his sights set high. You know, he's got to get on Padme's level. So.
That's true. That's true. He will bring balance. Will bring balance. He's got to take care of his girl, who doesn't need to be taken care of. She's perfectly fine.
She has got it under control.
But as Maul gets cut in half, we eventually learn that there can only be two, Sith rule of two, which is like almost immediately retconned with any other piece of Star Wars media. It's like, it's only two, except this guy and this guy.
Except when there's not.
Very similar to Yoda, there is another, and it's like, yeah, well, there's like 30 others right now, dog. What's up? Why?
There are lots of others, my dude.
But the good guys win. They save the day. Qui-Gon has his Jedi burial. You know, very obviously, very similarly to Darth Vader as Anakin. Mm-hmm. Then they celebrate in Theed. The music is fire. The horns, fire. So good. They really just, they know how to party.
Absolutely. Now, what does she give as, like, what is, I'm like, what is it? Because it reminds me of, you know, like when you're a kid and you have those, like, I don't know what they're called, those spears, where if you touch them.
The plasma balls. Yes, yes. Oh, it's what's inside the Vaxis Act 2 box set. For those two of them. That's what's inside.
Plasma ball. Okay, I know that's not what it is, but also, can you blame me for thinking that?
Like, it's not explained. It's just like the truce ball. Like, what is? What did? She, why did she just give him a ball?
A ball.
It's like glowing and shit. Like, you think you're gonna see it again in any other film? Like, it has some kind of importance, but it's just
nope,
not there. But we do get to see Anakin as a Padawan with his braid and his little spiked gel hair. And that's like a cutesy little, and you know, he goes from this bowl cut to like, you know, he's refined now. He's
making
his Padawan.
I liked the bowl cut. It was cute.
But all of this in a 2.5 hour movie, a little sus. I give it a 6 out of 10. What do you give it?
Yeah, I'm going 6 out of 10 as well. Because I think I remember leaving the theater like, what just happened? And again, like, to this day, I'm like, what just, okay. I think I do, like, again, I said this at the beginning, I think if you were given a little bit more time to be, like, shown, like, the political landscape of the day, like early in the movie, I think it would have helped things flow a little bit smoother. But here we are. We all made it through. Does that make sense? I mean, I don't.
Yeah, it's the pacing is just weird.
It's weird pacing coupled with kind of basic dialogue at times. And the dialogue is like, it just feels choppy. I think that's the word I'm looking for.
Absolutely. And it does get worse before it gets better.
It gets worse before it gets better.
And okay. Even better is still iffy.
Yeah.
I think overall my favorite scene, is probably the dual lightsaber ignition. That's just such an iconic moment, but
my favorite scene is Anakin and his mother. Goodbye.
There are amazing scenes in all the Star Wars films, even the ones that we may not like the best. There's a reason why they are so wildly popular and so beloved, regardless of the film overall. You know, there's an attachment to these characters. You grow with these characters. You feel for these characters. And this has been another intergalactic episode of the All Things Coheed podcast. My name is Devin.
And I'm Yui.
And may the Force be with you.
Getting a cease and desist.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a...
Do not do it. Fire. Straight fire. All right, we're going to get better at this.
It says starting recording.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Does it say that it's recording on your end?
I didn't say anything on my end, but let me check. Yes. Yes? Yeah. No. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Cool, cool, cool.
All right. What are we naming this? It's got to have a fun name. The All Things...
All Things Star Wars? I don't know. All Things... That was me doing a drum roll.
There's a real corny Star Wars joke in there somewhere.
We'll have to sit with it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what? Let's jump into it, I guess. Welcome home to the All Things Not Coheed podcast. We're doing some Star Wars stuff tonight. I'm Devin.
I'm Yui.
That was really awkward. Do you want to do another one of those?
Okay.
Welcome home to the All Things Star Wars podcast. That also felt weird.
I'm so glad we can edit podcasts.
I know that.
These really amazing pauses and ums and
They're just, my notes are so scattered.
Yeah, I get that. Mine too. We'll get better at this.
We will. Okay. That was a pause for the music. So.
Yeah. I think we need a better intro.
I do think we need a better intro, but also, what do we do?
All right, because I'm trying to think, like, come on. Man. I should have been thinking about this.
I know this was like a major like non-issue, and then now it's a thing.
Maybe it will come to us. I don't know.
Yeah, we can do an intro later. We can always plug that in. Hey. All
right.
All things Coruscant.
Things. Yeah. Not the worst.
Oh, that's pretty bad.
What?
No, I said that was pretty, that's pretty bad.
Not the worst, but it's not the best. All things. Oh, man. All things. Hmm.
Welcome home to an All Things Coheed episode. Film, oh, damn it. I had something really good. Trust me. It's going to be all right.
Okay, let's just...
All right.